Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs. Joe McCann, Phil Bush with you here on your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast on Cracked Sidewalks. Phil, I know you, like half of the Marquette fan base, are just trying to get past Sunday.
I don't want to talk about it.
We won't get into that. We're going to try to refocus on Marquette basketball, the week that was, the week that shall be. And we're also going to talk about the future of the Big East and, you know, some decisions made by the NCAA over the weekend and how that may or may not affect the Big East. But we'll get to that later in the show. Phil, I guess we'll just start with the week that was in Marquette basketball. A thrilling win over, I guess, record-wise, the worst team in the conference in Creighton. I guess we'll start with the good side. You know, Carlino with a big shot there, really just part of a good week overall for Matt Carlino.
Yeah, it was one of those games where the first 18 minutes, you thought, man, this is going to be great. Maybe we'll get out of here a little early and we'll generally cruise and get rested up for the Xavier game. Might even get to see what the walk-ons look like. And then the last 22 minutes just devolved into a Marquette against DePaul type of feel, and Matt Carlino played the hero. Matt Carlino and Dwayne Wilson, the only two players to score in the second half, which is amazing that we won.
Yeah, I think in the last podcast we were talking about the guards stepping up. I mean, that's not exactly what I had in mind.
Right, I didn't mean step up by everyone else stepping back.
Like only them stepping up and everyone else doing nothing, essentially. But I'll take the win, but I will give Carlino credit. He stepped up, had a couple big games. His shot is coming around a little bit. After I was, beginning to wonder, how much of a shooter he was going to be for the team this year, his shot selection I thought improved, and of course he was the only reason Marquette won the Creighton game, and really he was the only reason Marquette was in the Xavier game, to be honest with you. So I thought overall that was probably one of the positives I took away from last week was guard play, Carlino especially, but Dwayne Wilson not bad himself.
No, not at all, and they stepped up when they needed to. Dwayne Wilson has, I wouldn't say he's emerged from the slump, but the Creighton game was a help, and he's starting to play a little more consistent. And Carlino, I mean, as much as we've kind of bagged on him a little bit this season, he is shooting 42% from behind the arc.
Which is
very good. He's not too bad on the turnover front, but he's actually tied with Derek Wilson for most assists on the team, which, when we get to the Xavier game, we'll talk about their attempts at assisting things. But I mean, Carlino has been turning on of late, and they need it. I mean, I'm starting to think that Carlino is the go-to scorer on this team, which is weird.
Yeah, you would hope there'd be a couple more around him, but yeah, I think it was Paint Touches tweeted a good point about Carlino this week when everyone was running stats about him. He said, for whatever reason, it just seems like Carlino's misses stick out in your memory more than his makes, and maybe some of those were like some of the late game shots and some of the losses, but when you look at the whole body of work, Carlino actually has been very good, and hopefully that continues because, one of the disappointments for me, Phil, in Big East play, he's been a great addition to the team and he's a key player, but man, Luke Fisher has not been exactly what I had hoped he would be in Big East play. I know he's facing double teams and I know he's getting hounded out there, but still, I wasn't expecting him to average 25 a game, like he did in the first four games or whatever it was in non-conference play, but he has really struggled, and I guess it's kind of the point of kind of a result of being the focal point of the other team's defense.
Well, I think they're essentially what all the other teams are doing is saying, okay, we're going to guard Carlino on the perimeter and we're going to pack the lane with everybody else and double down on Luke and take him away. And Luke hasn't been able to really get going because they are packing the lane. But I also think part of it is our problem. I mentioned the assists. The guards are really struggling to feed Fisher. I they're not doing it early enough in the possession, is my opinion. I think they're, Fisher kind of establishes post position. They go to feed it and say, man, maybe not. Then they work the ball around and then they end up feeding it to him late. And the other thing is, I think Luke Fisher, and we talked about it early on, is I think he's going to struggle at least this season with athletic big men. I mean, we got to remember, this is He hasn't technically even played a full season of college basketball yet.
Yeah.
He's still learning.
Yeah, he is. It was I kind of laughed at myself a little bit last week when during the middle of the week when, you know, the reporters and everyone were kind of tweeting along with Big East coaches teleconference. I was kind of following that on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Mack, Xavier coach, of course, when he was asked about Marquette, he said, you kind of have to pick your poison with Marquette. You either have to shut down Fisher or you have to guard the perimeter. You know, which one would you rather live with? And I thought to myself, well, I know which one I would live with. I know
right.
which poison I would pick. I mean, that's like choosing between cyanide and beer. Cyanide will definitely kill you. Beer might, but probably won't.
Right.
Unless you're a couple of
guys we knew in college.
Right, like some people we may or may not have known. But, you know, if you leave Luke Fisher by himself one-on-one, he's going to have some big games. So I think that's exactly what teams are doing. We're going to double Fisher. We're going to pack it in, and we're just going to, you know, if Marquette hits a few outside shots, if Carlino gets 20 points, we're going to live with that. And that's exactly what Xavier went with. You know, they said, you know, look, we may let Matt Carlino get 10 open looks from three. Maybe he gets 20 to 30 points, and that's what happened. He had 27 points in the game, but really no one else was able to muster any kind of offense. So mission accomplished for Xavier. Let Carlino roam free, and if he hits a few shots, okay, but no one else really was able to hit any, and then you shut down Fisher, and that's really the recipe for beating Marquette.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, you really start to wonder if this isn't, you know, because again, you know, and we're kind of blending the Creighton and the Xavier games, but in both games, Marquette got off to hot starts, kind of faded a little towards halftime, and then in the second half, between, you know, coaching adjustments and whatnot, you know, next thing you know, solid leads are looking like shaky leads, which turn into, you know, deficits, and then they've got to fight back into it. You know, you wonder two things. One is this, the eight strong is a great catchphrase until you actually have to play with eight players.
Yeah.
You wonder if the roster size is really starting to catch up with them. And the other question is, you know, are Wojo's in-game adjustments efficient? I mean, from your viewpoint, do you think Wojo's coaching is in question there a little bit in the second halves, or
no,
do you think it's a tired thing?
No, I definitely don't think it's Wojo's adjustments. I mean, maybe he had a rough game against Xavier, but I wouldn't go back to your first question about the H strong thing, and is you know that wearing them down? Yeah, it is. But what do you want them to do about it? They can't add anybody to the roster, and that's kind of why I'm fine with the eight strong thing, because these guys need a rallying cry and a reason. And the whole point behind the eight strong thing is they need to get the absolute most out of all eight guys, and that was the disappointing thing with Juwan Johnson this past week. Of course, you've probably heard by now Wojo's comments after the game. The reason Juwan Johnson did not play in the Xavier game is he apparently had a bad week in practice. So officially it goes down as a DNP coach's decision, where unofficially it's essentially a suspension for Juwan Johnson in the Xavier game, which is hugely disappointing for a team with only eight players to basically have to go with seven because he did not give the coaching staff what they were expecting in practice. That can't happen when you only have eight guys. So from that perspective, that was really the most disappointing thing for me last week, is that the reason Juwan Johnson didn't play is because he didn't give enough effort in practice. That has to change. I hope that's just a one-time thing, a learning experience, and it's not an indication of things to come, or otherwise I don't know how much of a future Juwan Johnson has.
Right. Well, and that's the big thing, is that you're playing at a disadvantage already, and, you know, I'm not going to pick on, I want to focus on the Juwan Johnson thing a little bit, but, you know, the thing is, Steve Taylor's already not exactly delivering a ton of highlight reel performances. So you're kind of behind the eight ball. You're already playing seven and a half men at that point. And then Juwan Johnson does whatever it is he did in terms of not showing up at practice to really, you know, earn the coach's ire. And you would think with having eight guys on the roster, you know, Wojo had to look real long and hard and say, you know, do I need to suspend him? And so whatever it is he did in practice or didn't do in practice, you know, it's not like he, you know, Wojo did this on a whim. There had to be a legitimate
I guess when there's only eight guys in practice, it's hard to hide.
Right.
Your flaws are going to jump out.
You get noticed over by the water cooler taking an exorbitant number of breaks.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're if you're going 5-on-5, I mean, coach is going to notice,
right,
you know, if you're slacking off in practice. So, again, I'm hoping that's just a one-time thing as far as effort, and Juwan Johnson gets it together and can get back on the floor this week against St. John's.
Well, but, do you have an issue with the suspension at all?
No, I don't.
Yeah,
I think absolutely. I mean, I'm totally behind disciplining players who don't, because you got to make examples of kids. Because if Wojo makes, you know, lets it slide, then you're sending a message that I'm going to let half-hearted effort slide, and that is absolutely not what he can afford right now. So I am 100% behind Wojo on sitting Juwan for effort and practice if that's what happens. So
right, and I think the other part of it is you're coaching for the future, right? Like if you compromise your principles now because you say, well, I have to have this player, you know, I'm making an excuse because, you know,
that's part of what this year's about. It's like, do I want these guys going forward? Who are the guys I definitely can count on over the next couple of years? Because the next couple of years, especially next year, with, you know, Ellenson coming in for, who knows, it may only be 1 year for him if he's as good as advertised. You know, you want to make a run and make sure you have the right pieces around him to get as much as you possibly can out of him. So, so I guess this is a learning experience. Maybe Wojo's going to push Juwan and see if he pushes back. And see if he and I hope he does. I hope Juwan does push back and get fired up and say, "Look, I'm going to put in some effort and I'm going to play the way you want me to play." So hopefully he does that this week. But you know, to your other question about Wojo's adjustments, I guess watching the game, I guess I didn't really, nothing jumped out at me as far as strategy wise that I thought he did poorly in the game. You know, the thing that's got to be so frustrating for him is Luke Fisher and his foul trouble. He's got to almost feel like he needs to play Luke the entire game, but he can't.
Right.
And because, you know, he gets in foul trouble. Because when Luke goes out of the game, Marquette is such a weaker team. And we've seen it. And, not to blame the game on an official, but I thought one of the turning points in that game was – or not a turning point, but a key play in the game was when Xavier left Stainbrook in with two fouls, and Luke went to work down low on him, and Stainbrook flopped, and that got Luke his second foul. And so then Luke sat out the rest of the first half, whereas if they had gone that call the other way, if Stainbrook could have gotten a foul, then that would have been three on him. That would have limited Xavier for the rest of the game, and Luke would have still only had one foul and probably could have finished out the half, gotten a lot more minutes, and maybe he could have gotten in some kind of groove.
This is once again where I feel officials should be trained in physics. And how does Stainbrook possibly take a hit like that from Luke Fisher, who he outweighs by probably 50 pounds?
Right, and yeah, just went over like he had been hit by a truck.
Right. Yeah, the other sniper on the grassy knoll got him.
I suppose so. But that was, like I said, not to blame the whole game on one call, but I thought that was a critical one for Marquette. Because the thing is, every time I'm watching a game and Luke Fisher has to go to the bench with foul trouble, you know, I just kind of groan like, oh, man.
The offense stagnates. They don't, you know, because then they can definitely pass the lane or pack the lane. Whoever's down low can help off a Steve Taylor without question. Because, I feel like I'm picking on Steve here a little bit. And I like him, but he just hasn't been able to step up. And
he just has not looked very athletic.
Right.
Lately.
I think that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, and the thing is, when Fisher's on the bench, like Chris Mack said, you pick your poison with Marquette. But if Fisher's on the bench, you can do both. Fisher's not
right.
scoring, and you can guard Carlino. So then you're really out of options there. So then teams are just going to rely on Dwayne Wilson or Derek Wilson or Juan Anderson to beat them, and they weren't able to against Xavier. So that, you know, the game plan worked out perfectly for Xavier, and Chris Mack got exactly what he wanted in that game. So
well, and I think the Xavier game is the example of, you know, especially with Juwan Johnson out, I think that's where the short bench really hurt them, because especially with Juwan Johnson being the one out, you know, we played a lot of 1-3-1 against Xavier. Well, I wouldn't say a lot, but a fair amount of 1-3-1 against Xavier. And within that scheme, Juwan Johnson, who's kind of got some Jarrell McNeil tendencies, he's a riverboat gambler on defense. And I think the 1-3-1 allows him to be aggressive and you know, maybe you turn Xavier over, you know, in the first half we turned him over 12 times. If you get 10 or 11 of those in the second half, you know, because Juwan's out there, fresh legs, turning teams over, that was leading to our offense. I mean, our offense really wasn't that great between Carlino and his shooting and our transition offense. That's where we scored the points. It wasn't like we got into half-court sets and lit them up.
Yeah, and plus when Marquette started the second half, Marquette was turning the ball over.
Right.
I mean, Derek Wilson had three. That's like eight for another player, you know, because right. Derek Wilson never turned the ball over, and so he had three. Carlino, as good as he was scoring the ball, he had five turnovers. Four players had at least three turnovers. Juan had four. Luke Fisher had three. So yeah, when they start giving the easy bucks to Xavier the other way, that's when, you know, X kind of made the rally and went the other way.
And that's why I say I think part of the issue with Luke Fisher is not necessarily Luke's play himself, but the fact that they just can't. I don't know if it's a lack of practice or, you know, teams are crowding them on the perimeter when they have the ball, and it's preventing them from.
It
does.
Yeah, it just seems so impossible. It just seems so impossible to get him the ball. And you know, maybe we just need someone with a little more of a pass first point guard, a little better passer up there who can just feed the post just a little bit better, and just get it down to him, and that, so he can go to work before the double team comes. Because you know, Luke Fisher has to have good games if Marquette is going to beat any kind of decent team in the Big East. Because you look at the Big East, there is a very clear gap in my mind, I guess, as far as the RPI between the top seven and the bottom three. But I guess it's a little murky now when now that DePaul upset St. John's. So DePaul's hanging in there.
DePaul is just tearing things up.
Yeah, and I mean, DePaul's got four wins, and I would say against probably, you know, the four teams that are finishing in the lower half, but still they've got four wins. And then St. John's is probably the underachiever in the conference right now. But I mean, I guess maybe I should say there's probably six teams that have separated themselves, since I think St. John's is kind of slipping away right now. But yeah, there's those six teams at the top, and if Marquette's going to beat anyone in that middle of the pack, like, you know, between 4 and 7 in the conference, they've got to have big games from Luke Fisher. I mean, he's got to be dependable. He's got to be scoring in double digits, and Carlino's got to, you know, if Carlino continue to play the way he has, maybe a few less turnovers, but other than that, if he can play the way he has and just get some kind of consistent contribution from Fisher and one other player, then yeah, maybe Marquette can get a few wins, you know, in the middle of the conference. I still don't expect him to beat anyone near the top of the league, though.
Right. Well, and again, this team is going to be, I mean, as frustrating as it is, what the record is, if you look at it in total, again, it's not like the team is being blown out. They're no. competitive in games. You could make the argument that they legitimately had a shot. Legitimate's awfully strong, but I mean, there were opportunities to, at a minimum, be 4-1 in conference, if not 5-0. I mean,
there were moments in all of their losses when you thought they were going to win.
Right. They had leads in the second half of every game this season.
Yep.
So, Georgetown is the only – well, even Georgetown, they had a shot to win at the end. So, again, this is where I go back to the respect the process. It may be frustrating. It may look ugly. But at the end of the day, we're still getting, you know, efforts out of the team that – you know, we really didn't get last year.
Like I've said many times in the podcast, this team hasn't quit, right. And I don't expect them to quit. And so they're still watchable to me for that reason, because I know they're going to come out and give a good effort and take the floor every night expecting to win. You know, I don't expect them to win every night, but I think they have that attitude. And, you know, they're going to fight to the end. They're going to be a team that other teams are going to hate to play. But I expect them to still be entertaining and have those moments, even against some of the better teams where, you know, you have some hope that they might get the win. But yeah, the effort has been good. It's just the fact that they wear down, like you touched on earlier, Phil. You know, with only having eight guys, and if Juwan Johnson's getting benched, then they've only got seven. And so it's just so tough to win a game in the Big East when you've only got seven guys going out there.
Yeah, it really is.
But the question is that this next game, as we look – to the week ahead here, at St. John's and then Georgetown at home. I'll start with St. John's. I've kind of been waiting for St. John's to kind of flip the switch and let that talent take over, because they have enough talent to be in the top half of the Big East, but they just keep losing games. And to me, when St. John's meets Marquette this week, it's going to kind of be like, we're either going to turn this thing around now or we're going to hit rock bottom. Because if from a St. John's perspective, if you lose to Marquette, you have kind of hit – maybe they thought it hit bottom against losing to DePaul. But if you lose back-to-back to DePaul and Marquette, I think St. John's is really going to fall off the bottom. They're going to finish in the bottom three in the league.
Right. Well, and I think this is a this is a job-type game for Steve Lavin.
Lavin's seat is red hot.
He's fighting for a job. If you lose to DePaul and Marquette back-to-back, and, you know, I don't care what DePaul's record is – They're just not a good basketball team, and Marquette being what it is, you lose to Marquette back to back. Steve Lavin, I don't know that he makes it to February.
I don't know if they'd fire him midseason. I think they'd ride it out, but I think you'd probably see a rash of decommitments from St. John's.
Right.
Yeah, like, all right, coach, I don't think you're going to make it.
And, but the thing is, and this is what has me concerned about. I actually think, and this is going to sound like just totally crazy, but I actually think we have a better shot at beating Georgetown at home than we do St. John's on the road, simply for the fact that St. John's is just a very bipolar team, and they can get red hot from the field. And if they get red hot from the field, look out. Harrison did Marquette in last year with
Harrison's a guy who could take the, you know, just all of a sudden just drop 35 on you in the blink of an eye. And that's what concerns me about St. John's, is they have the athleticism to be one of the top 3-4 teams in the Big East. They just haven't shown it, and they just keep losing games. And we'll see how fired up they are and see if they're going to get motivated and say, turn this thing around, or if they're going to look at Marquette like a, look, I mean, we don't have to, you know, we're going to relax this week. We're going to get this win easy, and then we're going to refocus. Because I think if they take Marquette lightly, Marquette could absolutely go to New York and beat St. John's. And I am hopeful that they can get one, but, I mean, Marquette has not won a true road game this year, so that is why I enter the St. John's game with some pessimism.
Yeah, I do too. Now, the only thing I really hope, the positive, I think, again, if they respond appropriately, is Juwan Johnson comes out with a fire under his butt. You know, yeah. And says, all right, you're going to bench me? Fine. That's fine. Maybe I didn't do enough in practice, but I'm going to come out and show you I need to get minutes.
Yeah, just hope I hope he owns it and just realize he did something wrong, and it's in the past now. Don't let the issue from last week hamper you in the next week. That's in the past. Fresh start and get going this week. And I hope he comes off the bench and can hit a few shots and get his confidence back, because there's been a few games this year where Juwan Johnson looked like he had his swag back and looked like he was going to be a confident player again, and I just hope he hasn't totally lost that.
Yeah, I agree. But like I said, I do think, if I'm predicting, I think we go into Madison Square Gardens and don't come away with a win,
thing is, I'm looking at the next 5-6 games, and I'm not sure. Marquette's probably going to be an underdog in all of them, to be honest with you.
It has to be.
I think they'll probably be an underdog at St. John's. They'll be an underdog probably at home to Georgetown and Seton Hall, especially if Isaiah Whitehead is back. Butler at home, I'm not sure what the line would be on that one. That would be kind of close. And then at Villanova, they'll be a huge underdog. And then at Seton Hall after that, probably an underdog as well. So going to be tough to find wins here. So that's why it would be lovely for Marquette to get one win this week. Whether it's St. John's on the road or Georgetown at home, I would be elated with either one. But we've kind of already touched on all the things that need to happen, Phil, because, I mean, I think we know kind of exactly what this team is right now. We need, Marquette needs Fisher to step up. They need to find a way to get him the ball and get him to go to work. Hopefully he stays out of foul trouble and can get, you know, around 30 minutes in the game and just get kind of in a groove, and because he's still shooting over 75% on the season. And then they need more than one guard to play well. I mean, they need, you know, if Carlino can get you 27, that's awesome. But you still need another, like a similar effort from, like, Dwayne Wilson had a couple good efforts this week. And, you know, yeah, they can beat teams in the Big East. But, you know, whether you're only playing seven or eight guys, you know, when some guys don't bring their best game, then it's going to suffer and you're probably going to lose. Well, I guess that's really all we have to break down for St. John's and Georgetown. I mean, there's really not much more to it.
Right.
I think Marquette's going to be an underdog in both games. And the thing is, they played Georgetown so close in Washington, D.C., and you would, you know, maybe, the, you know, you can flip the script against Georgetown at home, because that would be a really nice win to have, because Georgetown is one of the stronger RPI teams in the league, and if you could pick them off, I think that would be a nice confidence booster.
Yeah, oh, I agree. That's going to be the key, is you just got to get a few wins. You know, I don't know. At the end of the day, I think everyone's got to have their expectations correct, that it's just going to be a tough season. We're going to get some wins, but we're not going to get a ton of wins, and we're building for next season. And the sooner everyone kind of comes to terms with that, and I don't think the team has this attitude, but as fans, the sooner we come to terms with, hey, you know, we just got to get wins where we can get them, and if we can, we can, and if we can't, we can't. You know, that's as long as they continue to be competitive in every game, that's really got to be what you count.
I think that's probably the frustrating thing, is like our expectations were pretty low coming into the season, but when they keep getting so close to big wins, you got to get your hopes up. Like,
right.
Oh man, let's beat Xavier on the road. That'd be awesome. All right, let's beat Georgetown. That'd be awesome. And then they get so close, and then they don't win.
Right.
It's just so disheartening. But you know, my hope is for this team, especially for the seniors, that they get some win at some point this season that they could really hang their hat on. Say that was a great win, because I said that all year last year about last year's team, and they never got it.
Yeah, and last year's team never seemed to step up.
Last year's team never had a really good win, and I hope this team does get a
well. And
really
I think it's fair to say, in my opinion, and maybe you have a different opinion. I've already come to the conclusion that this year's team is better than last year's team. The record may not show it, but I think this year's team is A, more interesting to watch, B, less frustrating, and C, is just an overall better team.
I struggle with that, because talent-wise, last year's team should have been so much better.
Oh, agree.
With two big guys and, you know, an athletic kid in Jamil Wilson, who was a fringe pro, really. I mean, I think he's still in the D-League right now, so he's kind of, you know, he was close to making the Suns. And you would think with that team, if they went head-to-head, but, you know, maybe the coaching edge would be with this year's team. I don't know, but I think the motivation would be certainly with this year's team. Like I said, the effort would be with this year's team. So I'm going to put a hold on that for my opinion. I'm going to wait till I want to see this team play a few more games, especially against, you know, like Seton Hall and Villanova and Butler, before I decide which team is better. But
fine, take your measured, careful approach.
Yeah. I will say this, I am enjoying watching this year's team more than I enjoyed watching last year's team. That's only because I thought last year's team would make the tournament and win a game or two. Like, this year, I was just hoping this team would make the NIT. And so when your expectations are so much lower, you know, you tend to, you know, go into each game with, you know, lower expectations. So I'm not expecting them to get any kind of big win. So I guess I've never really been truly disappointed in this team, except for the DePaul loss and the Omaha loss. Other than that, this team really hasn't been that disappointing to watch to me, as opposed to last year's team, which was kind of disappointing every week, to be honest with you.
Yep, I agree with all of that.
All right. So we'll see how they do this week. Hopefully, like I said, between at St. John's and home against Georgetown, one win would be great, because then they're starting a three-game homestand, because then you hope they would kind of get one win out of those three games at home, Georgetown, Seton Hall, and Butler. Get one win there, because otherwise wins are going to be tough to come by in the current Big East. Phil, one thing I did want to touch on before we... Oh, by the way, speaking of next year, I want to mention this before I forgot it. Not playing this year, will next year. How about Wally Ellenson? Did you see what he did for Marquette track?
Shattered records.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, with all due respect to everyone who's been a part of the program, Marquette track is not a national powerhouse. But, you know, Wally is, of course, also a renowned high jumper. And in his first attempt as a Marquette Golden Eagle, broke the school record, and then went up another, what, like 4.5 inches and cleared 7.5 and change, I believe, in his first track meet, which is currently, as it stands, the number one mark in the entire NCAA right now. And worldwide, it is the third mark in the world as far as, I guess, amateur competitors, which is pretty amazing.
So he can jump?
He can jump. We knew that in Marquette Madness, though.
Yeah, we did know that. That's the thing. If he can play basketball at any kind of level, with that kind of athleticism, he's going to be more than just a guy we got to get his brunt.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to see what Wally Ellenson can do in a full year at Marquette, a full year of basketball. Because I, like I said, if as long as he has anything, any kind of resemblance of a jump shot and an ability to play defense, I think he would be a pretty good player.
I agree.
Yeah, we'll save that for next year. But all we know right now about Wally is that he can jump. So good for him. Hopefully he wins an NCAA championship. He is actually, I guess, the favorite right now because he has the number one mark in the country for right now. So good for him.
Hey, as long as we win a national championship in something.
Yeah. Might as well take what we can get.
Let's all run to the lake.
Woohoo. All right. But anyway, the other thing I want to touch on, Phil, before we get it out of here, and this is more not so much about Marquette, but the future of the Big East. For those of you who follow NCAA athletics, which I would guess most of you who listen to this podcast do, you know that the Power Five conferences, all those big, nasty football leagues, they passed really some landmark legislation, some big decisions to the way scholarships are handled and NCAA athletics are governed by a lot of changes that, you know, people talk about students getting paid and, you know, covering more things for student athletes. Well, the big thing that passed was the NCAA has now approved the scholarships be worth the full cost of attendance. Now, what does that mean? I guess that means, Phil, besides just room and board, you know, now kids can, like, might get between $2,000 and $5,000 or maybe even more, depending on how much it costs, you know, expenses associated with college outside books and tuition.
Right. So that would include things like transportation and the cost for food and those sorts of things. So they essentially, and what's interesting about it is the schools themselves identify what the total cost of attendance is. So a school essentially says, all right, this is what tuition costs, this is what room and board costs, and then this is what we assume the average student would incur in terms of transportation and food and other incidental costs, and that becomes the total package that's then given to the student athletes, which if, you know, let's say Marquette offers $2,000 a year in cost of living for food and transportation, if the student only uses $1,000 of it, they get to keep the $1,000. So it's a very...
It's a little extra money in the pocket.
And yeah, to be honest, it's also very murky.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. You know, are teams going to take advantage of it? Of course they are. Of course schools would, you know, are going to say things like, oh, well, it probably costs about $8,000 a year, or, you know, $5,000 a year, when it really it's only, you know, two and a half, and students keep the less. You know, you make things like that, and of course people are going to take advantage of it. But to be honest, I really don't lose any sleep over it, because I think the student athletes, considering how much money they make for these schools, you know, if the schools can afford to pay them, good for them.
Right. I have zero, you know, in fact, I'm happy for the student athletes.
I am too. Yeah.
I think it's great that they're getting some money. What's going to be interesting is what's not clear to me is the impact. So if a school chooses to do the full cost of a scholarship, you know, full cost of attendance, does that apply for every scholarship athlete?
I think so. I think it does, because I think that's you get in kind of a Title IX situation there. I mean, I think you have to do similar.
You have to at least have parity between the genders. I just don't know if, you know, like if you give it to if you gave it to men's soccer and women's soccer, does that mean you have to open it up to everyone? Or
probably
can
so.
You
I think
balance
so,
the numbers?
You know, each schools can kind of govern themselves on things like that. Now, to be clear, I said the Power Five conferences. The reason we're bringing this up, of course, so obviously Power Five, you know, for those who don't, we're talking about the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10. But all other leagues, including the Big East, can now vote to enact the same thing. And Phil, from what we've heard from the Big East, is that they are going to do whatever the big boys do. So I am expecting, hoping that sometime within the next few months that the Big East will adopt something identical or very close to what the football schools just did, or else the concern is that, you know, then you really start getting hit in recruiting when other schools can promise more financially to a student.
Yeah, I think what this has the significance for this, the Big East has already said, and multiple people in the Big East hierarchy and in multiple sources have already said, you know, if the Power Five do X, we're going to follow suit. So I think the Big East is going to be fine. It's going to be interesting in two instances. It's going to be, you know, because it is kind of controlled by the schools, are you going to get every school in the Big East that, like DePaul, not to pick on DePaul, but,
But we can pick on DePaul.
We can pick on DePaul. But they're renowned for not wanting to spend a lot of money on their athletics department. Are
Except
they gonna,
for Purnell.
Right, right. Well, all right. They're not known for spending their money wisely in the athletics department.
There you go.
Are they going to keep up in kind of with the arms race, or are you going to have potentially some teams that may or may not have deep pockets from a revenue sports standpoint unable to keep up?
Yeah.
And I think the other aspect of it is, I don't think it, like I said, because the big conferences are going to, or the Big East is going to follow the Big Five. What's going to be interesting is it's going to create not disparity between the Power Five and, say, Big East and the SWAC. It's going to create disparity between the top conferences in general and the little conferences. And what you'll end up having is potentially less, because one of the things that you were seeing was a lot of talent dispersed throughout college basketball, right?
Right.
A player wasn't going to go to North Carolina who was of middle to high talent to just sit on the bench. He was going to go to Murray State or, some other school like that where he could get minutes and playing time. Well, now all of a sudden, if, there is a dollar value difference between going to school at North Carolina or Marquette or UConn or whatever versus right. going to a Murray State, you may see more talent influx back into the power conferences.
Right, exactly. I could go to, let's say, let's since they're in one of the Power Five, let's say I could go to Wisconsin and get a full stipend, get another $5,000 that I could, pocket myself or send back home to mom and dad if I wanted to, if they're struggling financially. Or I could go to UW Green Bay where I'd start and be the best player on the team, but I wouldn't get that extra money.
Right.
And so, some, especially kids who struggle financially, and there are a lot of them who come from families who, need a little extra cash. I think you would see a lot of them lean towards going to a school where they would have, ride the bench a little bit and really have to work for playing time, where they could go to, just a notch below school talent wise and, start and be the star, but not get that extra cash. So
I think
even Jay Billis wrote a few weeks ago, not that this has anything to do with the Power Five's decision last week, but he said, in the future he would like to see, the NCAA, the basketball pool shrink to like 130 teams. He listed like the Power Five schools and he listed like the Big East and like five or six other leagues. And he said he would like to see them break off and be one, like Division One, and then like all those really tiny schools be like Division Two. So, these like teams in the Southland and, Big Sky, they would be off and be like a Division Two NCAA championship. Whereas the big boys would, I'd be all for that, really. The NCAA tournament would be so much better.
Right.
There would be still be some little guys, but there would be no tiny guys. So,
right, and you would still get the Cinderellas and the upsets.
Yeah, you'd get a Cinderella here and there, but you wouldn't get these teams from the Big Sky getting blown out by 60 by Kentucky in the first round.
Right. Yeah. So. It would be interesting. And it's and the other part of that legislation or was passed at the same time was the fact that sporting scholarships are going to be 4 years and you mm-hmm. can't lose your scholarship because of athletic performance.
Yeah, so like whereas now a coach could look at a kid and say, this kid is not who I thought he was. I'm sorry, this isn't going to work out. You got to go.
Right.
So now you can't do that. So you have to have cause. You can still pull a scholarship for academic reasons, disciplinary, legal trouble, anything like that. You can pull a scholarship. But if you just like sign a kid, realize he's no good, then you're stuck with him if he wants to be at the school. And I was thinking about that today, Phil. I wonder if that legislation will cause a dramatic decrease in the number of transfers, because we see hundreds of transfers every year, but we never know, because it's always like the same thing. Well, Phil Bush has decided to pursue other academic opportunities and we wish him the best, whereas you're really not sure if the school said you probably got to go somewhere else or if the kid said, I think I'm out of here. Whereas, now in the future going forward, it's always going to be 100% of the time, it's going to be the kid's choice.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the interesting thing is also from a, and I'm not a lawyer, I stayed at a Holiday Inn once, but, the thing is, are we going to, I agree, are you going to see transfers going down because there's going to be a lot less of the coach is saying, you know, hey, I don't want you here. You should probably go somewhere else because, you know, or we're going to pull your scholarship anyway. And, and they kind of transfer, but it's also going to be, you know, from the student perspective, how is that going to be enforceable? If, you know, if a coach says, well, he's not cutting it academically or he's a discipline problem, you know, how are they going to prove that? And,
yeah. I mean, I guess academically you can, academically, I guess it would be easy, you know, you say, oh, well, look, look at all these F's, you know,
yeah.
All right, see you later. But as far, yeah, if you have team rules, you know, like you'd say, well, he's missed curfew 5 times, you know, I that stuff has to be documented, I guess. To if you want to pull a scholarship, I guess I'm sure there are ways to document it, and there are, I'm sure, you know, coaches are control freaks, Phil, especially at the high major one, you know, Division I level. They're control freaks. They'll find a way to document where their kids are and when, so they can say, "Did you make curfew? Oh, looks like you didn't. Look, you missed it by 5 minutes. I could see you checked in 5 minutes too late, so you missed curfew. That's a strike, you know." Or we'll see. So I think they'll find ways to enforce discipline and document it if they need to pull scholarships that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think all in all, it's going to be a positive thing, but it's going to be interesting in the long run to see what, you know, I don't think it's a cataclysmic change, but it's a significant sea change that will have impact in the long run in how college basketball works. So it'll be interesting to see how Marquette and the Big East adapt to it.
Yeah, I would until I don't know if it'll happen tomorrow, but you know, I would anticipate sometime before this fall, the Big East will get that done, and so that they, because I think all the Power Five schools, I mean, all that stuff's going to take effect next school year, so the 2015-16 school year.
Yep.
So I think I would fully anticipate the Big East will vote on that. I don't know when their next big meeting is. I don't know, maybe they'll do it at the Big East tournament and get together and have a president's meeting or something. But I would anticipate. I bet it's before the end of the school year, honestly. So when, you know, when they're doing recruiting in the summer, they can start going to kids and saying, look, we're going to have this too.
And I did see that they can, if they have any scholarships they're going to execute before the 15-16 season, they can be executed under this new agreement.
Yeah, so there you go. So hopefully they get that done. So that's one last note I wanted to get in before we got out of here on Scrambled Eggs. But of course, the focus is Marquette basketball. Hopefully we get a couple. Hopefully get a couple wins. That'd be awesome. But just hopefully get one win. I'm lowering the expectations.
I'm looking for a win.
Give me a win this week, and we'll see if they get it done. We thank you as always for listening here on Crack Sidewalks. You can hit us up on Twitter with your comments, your thoughts, your war stories. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF. 23. You can hit us up at the Crack Sidewalks. That's the team Twitter handle. Or of course, you can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. Download the show on iTunes. And of course, we're on Facebook as well. That's where we post all the shows. Phil, let's get a win this week.
Oh, just one. Get us at least one.
And then we can get greedy and get two. We'll see. Seashells and balloons, everyone.